Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital and across America that the government does not want you to know. Today, we're going into the heartland. Our callers are all calling from the state of Kansas, and the question is a real controversial one in the state of Kansas. It's whether or not alternative theories to evolution should be taught in science classes in public school. Now, this isn't just an issue for Kansas. In fact, it's coming up in Missouri, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina, among others. And many of us have studied at least the history of this issue in school. Perhaps the most famous example was the trial in 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee, where a high school biology teacher by the name of John Scopes was convicted of teaching evolution in the Tennessee schools. At that time, a lot of intellectuals thought, well, that's it. That's the last gasp of creation science. But it certainly isn't. This is an ongoing political battle, and it's going back and forth in Kansas. In 1999, a panel of the school board removed evolution and said that alternative theories to evolution should be taught. In 2001, after a lot of outcry, the balance was changed and the alternative theories to evolution were removed. And now, again, the Kansas State Board of Education has again voted 6-4 to reject the findings of its own scientific panel, which said that evolution is the proper thing to be taught, and instead to teach creation science. Now, obviously, this is a very controversial subject, and I know that because I can see already on the weblog we have dozens of entries before the show has even begun. I'm going to do my best to read from the weblog and also definitely to hear the views of our guests. The guests are Celty Johnson and Mike Miles, who are defending the position that there should be alternative theories to evolution taught in science classes in public school, most specifically the theory of intelligent design, the idea that God created the heaven and the earth. And on the other side is Rachel Robson. She is a microbiologist, she's a Christian, and she's a board member of the Kansas Citizens for Science. I want to hear from all of them, and I want to hear from you. And I know I can't get to all your blog entries. There's simply too many for this hour. So the best way for your voice to be heard is simply to call in. Just dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can contribute to the blog at radioinsidescoop.com, but I just can't assure you that I'll be able to read all your comments. It is a very controversial debate. There are a lot of controversies. There's controversial political questions, too. The Attorney General of Kansas, Phil Klein, has been accused of violating the Kansas Open Meetings Law because he met with the six conservatives on the Kansas board, three at a time, to avoid public scrutiny. And yet, the overall question, I think, is not that limited political one, but the basic one of what should be taught in our public schools. And what is science? And what is politics? So there's a lot to discuss here. Again, I want to encourage you to call in, but first let me introduce my guests. I have, and let me make sure they're all there, I have Celty Johnson, who is a homemaker in Kansas, who is very upset that she's been lied to for 39 years, I believe she told me on the phone, by being taught that evolution was the only legitimate science theory in public school. Celty Johnson, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and with her on the same side of the argument is Mike Miles. And Mike Miles has a degree in, it's microbiology, Mike?
Yes, it is.
It's, a, I guess, a bachelor's degree, is that right?
Yes.
In the 1974, and they both believe that alternative theories to evolution should be taught. On the other side is Rachel Robson. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having us all on the show today.
My pleasure. I tell you, it's a very controversial topic, and I really want to get started. I know how controversial it is, like I said, because not only do I have dozens of blog entries, I already have a caller hanging on the line, and I've just started the show. So let me start with Celty Johnson. Now, as you told me on the phone in the discussion before today, you feel you've been lied to for
right.
most of your life. Please explain
right.
how you've been lied to.
Well, Mark, I love science, and since I've been taking science courses in the 10th grade in high school and all through university, I have about 160 hours in university-level education, and a lot of that in science, like microbiology and anatomy and genetics and physics and chemistry, and I don't have a degree to show for it, but I know, you know, the basics of science, and I was never given any information against evolution, just that evolution's true. And then when I hit 39 and my brother points out to me, because we live in different states, look at the moths. They're still moths, even though we're taught that the peppered moth going from white to black is evidence of evolution. I'm like, you're right, it's still a moth. There's no evolution. So I started doing 3 to 5 years of intense research on the information that's being withheld from the public and students, and I was just overwhelmed with how great the censorship is right now in favor of evolution and against anything against evolution and for creation.
And Celty, where did you do your research to find alternative theories to evolution?
I've used several websites, icr.org, answersingenesis.org, and csama.org, to all of them full of information from radiometric dating to everything that you can think about when it touches on origins.
Now, let me turn to Mike Miles, who I know agrees with you. Mike, do you think that there is scientific basis and validity to the websites that Celty reviewed?
Well, I'm not sure what the website she reviewed. I believe there's a scientific basis for questioning evolution and looking toward other things. I'm not one that says that either thing are provable scientifically, because historically, the theory of origins have always been metaphysical. Science can make contributions, just like they can in any investigation, like criminal investigation. But something in the past that cannot be repeated cannot be proved scientifically. Science can certainly shed light on it based on what we observe today.
Rachel, let me ask you, because we hear this all the time. I've seen a lot of this on the blog, the idea that science cannot prove anything, particularly something that happened in the past. It makes me wonder sometimes if we can prove the American Revolution happened, because it happened in the past too. How does science prove anything, or is the answer is that they don't prove it?
Indeed, it does call into question an awful lot of things that happened in the past, and I certainly trust that both Ms. Johnson and Mr. Miles are not arguing that we should cease to believe that the American Revolution happened because we only have people describing it in their writings, or things even further in the past, such as the origins of life. But first of all, I'd like to clear something up. I'd just like to say that we have to be very clear that even though this sounds initially right now like something, some sort of scientific fight, what we're looking at here, these assaults on evolution, don't have anything to do with science, but they have an awful lot to do with religion. And we're not talking religion like scientific fact versus religious faith. We're talking about a narrow group of Christians who believe that people like me are guilty of apostasy and are trying to get the state to endorse their theology. Now, back to the actual question of how much scientific evidence there is against evolution. Ms. Johnson cited some different websites, and I think it's very interesting that there are websites that say all number of things, and certainly your website, Mr. Levine, is fabulous and full of nothing but the truth, but we all know that there are a lot of strange things out there on the Internet. That's why we don't determine what is scientifically true based on what somebody's website may or may not say. How we determine what science thinks is true is based on whether or not we can do experiments and we can look at evidence, and we do what's called the peer review process. Scientists collect data, write up that data into papers, and other scientists look that over and see if there's enough data there for it to sort of be plausible. If Ms. Johnson or Mr. Miles would like for other theories to be taught in school, I strongly recommend that they and maybe any other people who are interested in such things do some scientific research that back up those alternative theories And the moment there is any sort of scientific research that backs up any of this criticism, that's the moment it'll be accepted as science by scientists. But it's not going to happen before that.
I apologize for the beeping. That's a sign, actually, that our lines are full already, and I want to get to our callers. But briefly, Selty or Mike, how do you respond to what Rachel said?
Well, I'd like to respond. First of all, she talked about narrow-minded people. I don't think that's necessary in this conversation, or that I don't believe the revolution happened if I don't believe in evolution. I believe the revolution happened. But just like Francis Bacon said, he was the one that formalized the scientific method. He said things like history and other things will be studied by other methods. They're just more subjective. He didn't say they weren't true. He just said you can't have the same certainty. That's what epistemology is all about. But about being narrow-minded, I'm going to just quote one person. This is the person who was chosen of all the scientists of the world to write the introduction to the centennial edition of The Origin of the Species. He says, a long, enduring, and regrettable effect of The Origin was the addiction to unverifiable speculation. The success of Darwinism was accompanied by a decline in scientific integrity. This situation where scientific men rally to the defense of a doctrine they are unable to define scientifically, much less demonstrate with scientific rigor, attempting to maintain its credit with the public by suppression of criticism and the elimination of difficulties is abnormal and undesirable in science. This is a man chosen to write the Introduction to the Origin of the Species, Centennial Edition, as an honor. He didn't come from a religious point of view. He came from the point of view of a scientist. Now, labeling us as narrow-minded fundamentalists or whatever won't go for this guy.
Well, Mike, I tell you, I want to get to some of my callers because they've been hanging on the line and people are trying to call in and I know the lines are busy. So let me get right to them. We got a whole hour. Go ahead, caller. You're on the line with Mark Levine, Rachel, Selty, and Mike.
Hey, all of you. But Mark, my computer tells me you're not streaming. I wonder if you could put me back on hold for a moment and check with another caller.
Okay, I'm going to do that. Hang on. Caller, are you hearing on the internet or on the radio? Caller, are you there? I don't
Mark.
Know why that would be, but please, yes, go ahead.
Hey, Mark.
Is this Selty or Rachel?
That's Selty. This
I
is me.
I just wanted to add, in defense of the scientific evidence and experimental evidence, I would question why people don't appreciate the fact that there's hundreds of PhD scientists in America that reject evolution on the evidence.
Well, let me turn that to Rachel. What is the percentage of scientists that reject evolution? And what numbers are we talking about here, Rachel?
We're talking about much less than 0.1% of scientists. But first of all, I'd like to clear something up. I didn't say that anyone was narrow-minded. I said it was a very narrow, by which I mean a small group of Christians who adhere to these anti-evolution beliefs. Because not only is it a very small fraction of scientists, as I said, much less than 0.1%, much less than 0.1% of all the scientists in the world who express these sorts of doubts about evolution. But in fact, it's a very small minority of religious believers around the world and even a small minority of Christians around the world who hold to these beliefs.
Rachel, you're saying a small minority. Let's talk numbers. How many scientists do support creation science versus how many scientists support evolution?
Well, if you go to the Discovery Institute's website, they have a list of about 200 scientists who they say express doubts about evolution. Now, in the United States alone, there are well over 100,000 members of the American Academy for the Advancement of Science. So if you just right away, you can see that that's less than 0.1% of the scientists in the United States. But what's even more interesting is to compare the number of scientists who have these doubts about evolution that Selty Johnson cites, and compare that number to the number of scientists in the world who do not believe that HIV is the cause of the disease AIDS. Now, and if you compare those two numbers, not only will you see that there are, in fact, more scientists in the world who believe that HIV doesn't cause AIDS than there are scientists in the world who express these alleged doubts about evolution. And what's even more telling is that there's a significant overlap in those two lists. Many, many of the scientists who doubt evolution also doubt that HIV causes AIDS. which I think calls into serious question their scientific judgment.
Rachel, let me interrupt you here. I am told we are having a bit of problem with the internet stream. I'm going to go to a quick commercial break, hopefully resolve this issue so that people can hear this show all across the United States, not just in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you, on some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical help, and then there's financial help. With ScorePower from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 7.
Fax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com. Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, 35 taco dinners. Bam!
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. If you are listening on the internet, it should be working now. In addition to my radio listeners, we're talking about evolution versus creationism and how it's being taught or not taught in Kansas schools. I have my guests supporting alternative theories to evolution, namely the teaching of intelligent design or creation science. I have Celty Johnson and Mike Miles. And I have supporting that evolution is the only scientific theory that should be taught in public schools. I have Rachel Robson. Now, I want to read some of the things that we have on the blog here. Actually, let me first go to the phones. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. I hope, who is this?
This is Dave.
This is Dave. I hope you're getting it on the internet now.
Well, I'll give it a try as we're talking, but...
You want to ask a question of one of our guests?
Yes. It might be good if you held me for another moment, though, because, well, I could do it. I can say this. My memory is back in high school, which is 100-something years ago, the Catholic Church was very negative on the theory of evolution. Then they became neutral. And now for the last, 40 years, I'd say, they teach evolution in every university like there was never a word spoken against it.
In Catholic schools?
In Catholic universities, yes.
Interesting point. Let me raise that and make it broader, actually, because we've gotten some blog questions. Thank you for your call, Dave. For example, we have this on the blog, and this is a question for the procreation side. When the Bible was written, it was believed that the sun rotated around the earth. How many early astronomers were dealt with severely for teaching otherwise? We know, for example, the Catholic Church excommunicated Galileo for teaching that the sun went around the earth. Shouldn't these things be decided by peer review and scientific teaching rather than by religious doctrine Let me ask that to either Celty or Mike.
Well, first of all, anybody who studies Galileo will know that he was also opposed by the majority of scientists because they were very satisfied with Aristotelian cosmology. That's what was being taught, Aristotle's cosmology. And he was resisted by the scientists pretty much the same way as evolutionists are resisting the challenge today. It wasn't only... in fact, the Catholic Church was the one that was funding the scientific studies. They didn't like the results because it interfered with the cosmology.
But Mike, shouldn't at the end of the day...
Yes. Discussion should not be about religion and past conflicts. It should be about the evidence. And Dr. Robson, I think, by using what was hearsay evidence, she talked about an overlap between those who deny HIV is caused by a virus and those who believe in intelligent design. Now, I doubt whether she's had time to do that research, so she has produced some hearsay evidence that is obviously supposed to paint the people as some sort of loonies.
Well, let me let her defend herself.
Well, as a matter of fact,
go ahead,
thank
Rachel.
You very much for the opportunity. If you want me to, I can go ahead and send you the link to virusmyth.org, where there
that
is
would the link
list of all of
evidence.
Those scientists. And also I can send you the list from the Discovery Institute, and you can check that out yourself to see if there's any overlap or not, because, in fact, I have done that research. But you bring up, Mike, a very good point about Galileo, and it's true that Galileo was opposed by many of the scientists at the time. But how he won them over was not by going to his local school board and strong-arming the school board into teaching something that wasn't accepted as science yet. How he won the scientific community over was by producing data that supported his hypotheses. That being the case, what I wonder from both Mike and Kelty is what does their alternative hypothesis predict? Can they maybe tell me about just one experiment that these alternative theories would design? Like, what would be their experiment? How would they test their hypothesis?
I wish you would listen to my position first. I already said that since we're talking about a historic process like that introduction to the origin of species, I don't claim there's going to be scientific proof. Science can cast light on it, so don't try to get me to give some proof. Now, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Well, just so we're clear, Mike, you're saying there's no scientific proof of either position. Is that what you're saying?
My children were born in Brazil. That's a historic event. That can't be proved scientifically. Science might be able to contribute evidence to the correct decision, but it can't be proven. And so don't put me in that box where you're demanding some kind of scientific proof. But my question to Rachel would be, can you tell me of anybody who has ever witnessed or observed and repeated an increase in complexity, structural and functional complexity? Has anybody ever witnessed an increase in structural and functional complexity that happened by anything except design?
Oh, yes.
Rachel?
Yes. I personally, in my own research, have seen antibiotic resistance crop up all the time. Now, antibiotic resistance, while it seems like a petty thing
to
humans, is...
One at a time. Go ahead, Rachel.
It's an incredibly complex series of events that has to happen for bacteria to become resistant to antibiotics. They have to develop these incredibly complex pump systems and do different things with their RNA and DNA that they were never able to do in the past. So they do develop new complexity in the face of increased evolutionary pressure, just like evolutionary theory predicts they should. That's why if there is a competing theory that Mike or Celty would like to present, if it's a competing theory, it will make predictions that can be tested, just like evolution does. And that's why I wonder what the experiment would be that would test that theory.
Well, okay.
Go ahead, Celty.
I know what that would be. From memory, all complex, and this is what you can go out and test about complex systems that require design. All complex systems, as complex as a pocket comb, owe their existence to acts of creation by one or more intelligent beings using planning and design. And if you can go and disprove that, you've disproved creation science.
Well, then, do you, Ms. Johnson, think that... our current scourge of multidrug-resistant bacteria were intentionally designed that way, and that's why they have their very complex systems of pumps and things?
No, we understand mutations, and it's always a loss of information.
It's not a loss of information. They have to gain substantial new information.
One at a time. And Celti, you have the floor, and I want to ask you. You're saying we understand mutations, so you accept that mutations do exist in science.
Yes, just that, like we know, there's variation within a kind. There are hundreds of different dog breeds, but they're all still dogs. They're easily identified.
Do you accept that the mutations can lead a species to be better off in that environment or worse off in the environment and therefore more likely to procreate or not?
Yes, but not with any new biological structures or new functioning organs.
Well, when you say
it's never been observed.
When you say mutation, so you're saying that mutations happen, but they're always negative, never beneficial? Is that what you're saying?
Or they're neutral. They're just horizontal. They're just like I and Rachel probably don't look exactly alike. There's variation within the female kind. But we're all human females.
Well, this is an interesting theory because I hadn't quite heard all the details before, and I don't know if you'd agree with that, Mike. The theory that mutations are always either neutral or negative, but never beneficial to a species. Is that your view
almost,
as well?
Almost every textbook you get on mutations will claim that only 1 out of 10,000.
Oh sure. It's rare.
Harmful or prejudicial, and they really can't claim that one is beneficial as a total. Now, when I've asked about structural or functional complexity, when you talk about antibiotic resistance, that can be an enzyme, which is not a structure, it's a protein that's produced like penicillinase. If you're talking about influenza virus, you're talking about a change in the cell wall where the immune system doesn't recognize it. You're not talking about new structures. When we're talking about new structure, we're talking about new organelles. If you're talking about microorganisms, we're talking about new organs.
So you're saying new organs are never created by mutation.
That perform a new function. Now, you're talking about a cell wall that might be immune. The cell wall performs a cell function. It just happens that our system doesn't recognize it anymore.
Okay, let me give Rachel a chance to respond. Go ahead, Rachel.
Well, let's recap here. What I was asked to do was come up with some examples of an increase in complexity and some
structural and functional complex features
that were created through evolution. I did that, and when I did, the response that we got back was that those don't count for some reason. But I assure you, if you go into the literature which has been produced on antibiotic resistance in bacteria, just one small subset of the incredibly huge amount of literature backing up the theory of evolution that there is out there, I might add. But if you go into that literature, you'll see that, indeed, very complex new structures, not a minor change to a protein, as Mr. Miles asserts,
but some very interesting
complex new structures have risen in response to selective pressures, just like evolutionary theory predicts.
I want to stop both of you and get to a caller, if I can. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Rachel Celti and Mike. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, this is Bert from Kansas.
Hi, Bert.
And I wanted to ask a question related to something I saw on your web. It says, should the majority vote decide scientific principles?
Okay.
And my statement about this would be, if you're going to try to find out how many teeth a horse has, you count them. You don't hold a vote.
Okay. So that's a fair question. Let me ask it to Celti, who's done a lot of the work in lobbying the legislature to have creation taught as an alternative to evolution. As I understand it, the panel that was set up, the Board of Education hired a scientific panel, and this is the Board of Education that eventually voted 6-4 for creation science, and that scientific panel came up with the idea that it should only be evolution taught, and then they decided to overrule their own panel. Am I wrong about that, Celti?
The panel is in the majority rule right now. They're 6 out of 10 at the state school board level, and they are asking that science be returned to its great standing and be very welcomed by the community and the public if it's returned to the fact that science is searching for the truth, it's searching for logical explanations, follows the evidence where it leads without saying that only natural explanations are allowed. Just like you go into a court, there's other things besides natural reasons for people to die, and they're non-natural.
Okay, but Bert's
and it's
question
a
is
a reasonable thing for the state school board to have that kind of control, and they say we want science to be about teaching students to be critical thinkers and looking for logical explanations, have true knowledge, comprehensive knowledge, and then we can start working through this controversy. And it would not be a controversy anymore because you would have all the information presented. And when the school board's being denied that by this 26-member writing committee, I have a problem with that writing committee because they're not understanding their position.
Rachel is politics
for that state school board.
Rachel, is politics trumping science here?
Well, what do you think? You're a lawyer. Politics trumps a lot of things in our society, as we all know. But I'd like to get back to something that Celty said right there. I do wonder, Ms. Johnson and also Mr. Miles, what other causes you think are appropriate to have taught in science classes? Not just natural causes, but then also supernatural causes are appropriate for science?
Celty,
well, you teach the evidence and where it goes. Now, if the evidence points toward, like, Anthony Flew, the premier atheist of the last 50 years in Europe, became a deist, not because he was following a religious point of view. He looked at the naturalistic explanations of the origin of life and found them that they failed. And his only conclusion, if it's not naturalistic, it must be something else.
Well, but Mike, it's interesting. On this blog, we've had some discussion before the show even started between some who differ on your side. Some are saying that the biblical account of creation is literally true, and others are saying that, and I don't think, by the way, this belief conflicts with religion or evolution, the idea that evolution could be scientifically true, but there still could be a creator who is behind all this. Now, people on the blog disagree. Some think that theistic evolution is possible, and some think it isn't. And I guess my question for you and Celty is, do you think that theistic evolution, the idea of you having a creator and also believing in the science evolution, is possible, or do you believe in the literal account of the biblical account of creation?
Well, I believe that evolution has been a part of more religions than creation. It's part of the New Age religion. It's part of Hinduism.
So you see no contradiction then between the two?
Well, I think a lot of religions are comfortable with evolution because it's already in their religion.
Celty, do you?
Evolution is not neutral.
What I would say is I just want the students and the public, because the public doesn't know either, because I didn't know until I was 39 and way out of college. I want them to know what reality is. Science used to be the search for truth. I've had plenty of evolutionists who are in the establishment and leaders in the establishment say that no, it's been changed. It's no longer the search for truth. It's a system for creating hypotheses and studying data and testing that data. They're not searching for the truth, but the public is still confused, thinking, well, they really are. And that's, I want it to be a search for reality. And if there really is a supernatural creator who is God, then if the evidence pointing towards that, why in the world would we suppress that information?
And Celty, do you believe the evidence points to? Do you believe it points to the literal account of creation, or are you unsure about that? I'm just curious.
Yes, I believe it does point to a literal account of creation.
Earth created in six, heaven and earth in 6 days, the entirely as written in Genesis.
Well, you know, when I found out that so many human beings could lie to me about the evidence, I realized I need to stop believing just what everybody says, and I can trust what God says, and it does find it. He proves himself out through his creation. Everywhere we look, we look for the geologic column, and that's a great demonstration that there was a worldwide flood, because the geologic column is all over this earth, not just here and there. It's all over this earth.
Yes, Mark, if I may.
You know, and yeah. So I see great evidence, but I don't want to take the Bible into a science class and say, here, read the book of Genesis. I just want to, you know, say, if we want to question the age of the earth, don't freak out and act like we're fundamentalist fanatics that need to be silenced. Just say, okay, let's look at the
Okay. Well, Rachel, how would we scientifically determine the theory of evolution, the theory that the Bible is literally true? How would we determine which is more accurate?
Well, first of all, I'm with Celty here. I'm all for a search for the evidence, and that's why I certainly wish that these critics of evolution would produce some evidence in support of their contentions if they are serious about doing that. One way that we don't determine scientific truth is we don't determine it by going to an elected school board and trying to strong-arm them into doing whatever corresponds with our theological beliefs. How we do determine whether something is scientifically true is we go out, as I said, and we collect data, and we write that up into papers. those papers then get published in scientific journals after they've been reviewed by other scientists. And that is something that the proponents of intelligent design or the critics of evolution have yet to do. I thought
Mark,
I'd mention that the scientific journal Nature has had, I believe it's up to a £100,000, so that's what, about $200,000 prize for any scientist who can produce any research that contradicts evolution. It doesn't even have to disprove it. It's a pretty low standard of proof. And no one has collected that prize, even though it's been around since 1970. If someone was able to produce some scientific evidence that disproved evolution, it would be a barn burner. It would be everywhere. It would be published immediately because it would be so interesting.
But no one's been able to do it. Okay.
Well, excuse me. When Darwin, when he wrote his Origin of Species, and anybody wants to read it can just go to the recapitulation, the conclusion, at that point admitted that evolution would not have proof. He's talking about the fossil record in the present, and that the evidence in the past wasn't there yet because of an imperfect fossil record.
Yeah, but Mike, you're not addressing the issue of the reward.
May I please just finish my point?
But
everybody embraced it. Many people embraced it when Darwin himself admitted the evidence wasn't there. So I question the evolutionary community who was ready to embrace something when their author of it said the evidence wasn't there. But I have to go back.
Do you believe there is present-day evidence that contradicts evolution and you could win the prize that Rachel talked about?
Well, if statistical analysis of the probability of DNA evolving, like Francis Crick did, that's the reason he turned to directed panspermia, he came up with it's impossible for it to evolve here on Earth. And so he came up with directed panspermia. Now, if you don't want to accept that, see, that's not scientific proof.
Is it evidence that contradicts evolution?
Yes. Well, it's a strong argument against it. And
so why hasn't it been published in Nature? Why hasn't anyone claimed the prize?
Because there is a concerted effort to not let anyone whose conclusion is that there's a supernatural creator or anything else that contradicts evolution, they're not allowed to write for the peer review. And I've got evidence just in the Wall Street Journal. Here's this scientist named Richard Sternberg of the Washington Museum of Natural History, I believe. He just was an editor of his journal, and he just allowed a Stephen Meyer's article in his journal, and now he has been practically fired and is no longer the editor and has lost his office, and people won't even look at him when he walks down the hall because he tolerated contradictory evidence against evolution in a peer-reviewed journal.
Here's what I'm trying to understand, Salty. I mean, what you're really saying is that there's sort of, I don't know if I should use the word conspiracy or not, but that the 99.9% of scientists that Rachel's talking about are all sort of banding together to prevent these alternative theories here.
I don't believe they are. I think if their career is on the line, if they speak out and just have any kind of a concern that, well, this just doesn't look like it's proving evolution. In fact, it looks like evolution is pretty much impossible. If they express that in public or to a peer, the chances that they lose their job is very high.
Let me go to a caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine, Rachel Salty, and Mike. Go ahead.
Hey, Mark. This is Don down in Atlanta.
Hey, Don.
Hey, I'm in Cobb County, which is one of those you see in the Wall Street Journal, one of the counties that's trying to push in evolution. And, of course, it's a heavily Republican county. They always go hand in hand. And I hate to say it, but this is for the creationists, but when DNA was unraveled in the early 50s, that really showed that the evolution came out of the natural world, not from the skies. And here's my question for the creationists. If you accept hominids, which, you know, the evolutionists accept hominid skeletons as being the cousin to the first humans, then therefore you must accept evolution. So I want to ask them if they deny the fossil evidence that there was ape and a human common ancestor.
Yes, I do.
What do you base that on, Salty?
Well, Ramapithecus by the scientific community was proved to be 100% orangutan. Australopithecus was 100% small chimpanzee.
Now, that's Lucy. I haven't read that.
Well, because it's being kept from you. I doubt that you can even walk into your public library and find this information. That's why I encourage you to go to the website. Any books that are in my local library, I have had to purchase myself and ask them to put on their shelves.
Rachel,
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Yes, and I think you can see what this boils down to here. Now, I believe in a world where people do struggle for the truth, and we have a scientific method to sort of help us figure out what is scientific truth. In my world, we can do experiments to determine natural causes and effects. We can write those up in scientific journals, and little by little we can make some really amazing progress, as we've seen over the past couple hundred years, by using that scientific method. Now, I understand that not everybody lives in that world. For instance, Ms. Johnson seems to live in a world where there's a vast international conspiracy of scientists.
Wow.
There are magical designers who design every little thing in nature, and there are supernatural causes in science, too.
Wow.
That's fine for her to believe those things.
That's very condescending.
But that's what you keep talking about, is this vast conspiracy of scientists
life.
That you wouldn't be able to get a book in a library because...
Excuse me. I would like to serve as a referee here and get back to the evidence instead of characterizing people.
Okay, go ahead, Mike. What evidence do you see?
We were discussing mutations, evidence of evolution in antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And I'd like for the doctor to tell me, can you tell me if any of these bacteria, viruses, or whatever microbes that acquired this resistance, that if it were E. coli or if it was influenza virus or any, that went to the point where they said it's no longer E. coli, it's no longer influenza virus?
Well, the species boundary in bacteria is very sketchy. I'm sorry, were you about to say something?
Asking you, have they ever had to change the generic name because it mutated out of that genus?
Go ahead,
Rachel.
Well,
we did recently some genetic evidence uncovered the fact that E. coli 0157H7, which did not exist on planet Earth prior to the late 1960s, is a brand new species of bacteria that's sort of related to Salmonella and sort of related to E. coli. What we name things is just an artifact of how we name things. It doesn't show how closely related things are to each other.
I know.
Well, the heart of the question was, we're talking about things that have a very rapid generation rate, and I know one of the arguments at Cobb County with influenza virus, the woman was explaining that during our lifetime, an influenza virus could have something comparable to a million years of generations. Well, for me, that was interesting. She'd use that as an argument in favor of evolution, because if we can observe a million years of generations in a microbe, we might expect to see something more than antibiotic resistance. We might expect to see organs, organelles, legs, or whatever, since that's what evolution says happened millions of times in the past. Now, evolution claims that whole organ systems, whole endocrine systems, nervous systems, synapses, all this came about by evolution. My question, to get more, instead of antibiotic resistance and enzymes that break down penicillin, has anybody ever witnessed that kind of increase in complexity happening by anything except intelligent design?
I keep telling you over and over again that the mechanisms for antibiotic resistance are a vast increase in complexity. I understand why you don't want to accept that that's an increase in complexity.
I accepted a complexity. It's not structural or functional complexity.
Yes, it is indeed an
example. Let me interrupt this conversation and say that I need to go to a commercial break. And when we come back, and I know this conversation can go on forever. We only have about 15 minutes left. When I come back, I want to move on to the question of religion and how each of you believes that your beliefs either comports with or doesn't comport with your religion, and whether or not these are religious questions that we're addressing here or scientific questions. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
About consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi, and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? Ha, ha, ha. She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're in a raucous debate on the issue of whether creationism should be taught in the Kansas public schools, whether there are evolution. There are severe problems with evolution. We have on one side Rachel Robson, who is a microbiologist, a Christian, and the board member of the Kansas Citizens for Science, who argues that scientific evidence shows that evolution is the best scientific theory to describe the evidence. And we have Celty Johnson and Mike Miles. Celty Johnson is a homemaker who's been working very actively politically to persuade the Board of Education to give alternative teachings a chance. She says she's been lied to with all the scientific teachings that she's been taught. And Mike Miles has been challenging Rachel Robson to show that evolution has a sufficient complexity to be from evolution. And there's been some argument about whether bacteria does all that. If you want to call in, all you have to do is dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I've also been reading from the blog entries. And boy, are there a lot of blog entries here. And I'll just try to read some of them. There are suggestions that Darwin recanted his theory. There are suggestions that science can be proved. There is no evidence of creationism. And there's the suggestion by Bob that really creationism is a reductionist theory. Why did the sky? Why is the sky blue? God made it blue. Why is the sun so bright? God made it bright. Why is the water clear? God made it clear. And yet, the debate goes on. And one of the things I guess I found most interesting was by Vicky. Now, Vicky believes in a literal creation theory in the Bible. But she also says this, and this I definitely agree with her on. She writes, in life, we pretty much hear what we want to hear and turn a deaf ear to what we don't want to hear. We also see what we want to see and turn a blind eye to what we don't want to see. Generally speaking, we believe what we want to believe, what we are most comfortable with, and what we choose to believe. So let me start with you, Rachel, and explain to me how it is that evolution is not just your choice in what to believe, but actually is some objective truth beyond a simple choice you're making.
Well, and that's the miracle of the scientific method and of this process of peer review, is that because there are so many different scientists and we're so cranky generally and nasty to each other, it's really very impressive when we can all see that someone does have data to back up their claims. Now, we don't always agree that their interpretation is correct, but we do see that they have data to back up their claims. That's how science has been able to bring us such vast material improvements in human life over the past few hundred years, is because of this way of looking at the evidence and drawing conclusions from it that are independent of the way that you'd like to see the world.
Let me ask you what role your religion, you say that you're a Christian, Rachel, what role, if any, does your religion play in your acceptance of evolution as a scientific theory?
Well, I think your correspondent, Bob, has it right in talking about creationism being a very reductionist way of looking at the world. Basically, every great Christian theologian throughout history has talked about different kinds of causes. Of course, God is the ultimate cause for all of nature, but we believe that God wants us to understand those immediate causes, those natural causes for things in nature, too. And so that's why I agree with all those Christians throughout history, like Galileo and St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas, that we have to study the natural causes, the natural evidence that we have here on Earth to have a greater appreciation of God.
Celty, do you agree?
We look at the world around us, and we're observing the same information, and we just want to look for logical conclusions and causes, not nature itself did it, because nature is time, chance, and mutations.
Circumstance, I guess.
Mutations. And there's no God in that picture.
But,
so,
Celty, let me ask.
Right off the bat,
yeah.
You are addressing just one fraction of the evidence out there that makes it intellectually satisfying for all the atheists in the classroom, but there's plenty of other students that are still questioning because they're still open to the concept that there might be a God, and others that are committed to God. And it would be very neutral to present all the scientific evidence, because of the PhDs out there that say that it does exist, and let the people who believe in a creator feel intellectually satisfied, too, in the science classroom.
Celty, do you believe that people who believe in evolution are not Christian or not good Christians or don't believe in God?
If they say they're a Christian and believe in evolution, then they're confused, because Jesus believed in Genesis, and that's part of the same Bible. And he, you usually let the religious or the God of any religion dictate, what people believe to be a member of his religion, and God and Jesus, believe Genesis. So they're just confused.
Celty, what?
To be open and objective.
Yeah.
And when you rule out any competing theories, then you're not being objective and you're not doing good science.
Okay, go ahead, Rachel.
And once again, I do encourage partisans of intelligent design or creationism to produce some scientific evidence, produce some scientific papers, and we'll teach that as science. But we won't teach something as science just because you deeply believe it to be true or because you can convince the school board. That's not what should be taught as science. What should be taught as science is what's recognized as science.
You agree, Celty, that...
I absolutely agree that only science in the science classroom.
I'm here
to tell you that they're just leaving it out.
Well, let me ask you this. I know you believe in the literal account of Genesis. There are many accounts of creation. The Babylonians had an account. The Romans had an account.
And there's many accounts of evolution, too. There's Darwin and Neo-Darwinism and...
But here's my question. Should we judge the biblical account of creation and the account of the Babylonians and all of these according to a set of religious principles or scientific principles?
In science class, we're looking at the science principles. Observation, repeatability, falsifiability, logic, objectivity.
And
Clarence Darrow in the Scopes trial said it is the height of bigotry to teach only one theory of origins.
Okay.
And he was for evolution.
If I may.
Not evolution only.
Rachel, let Celty finish. Go ahead, Celty.
Back in 99, when this first was happening in Kansas, the first thing that the state school board did wasn't trying to get rid of evolution, because we need to study it. It's a interesting concept, and there's some chance it's valid, but... The board asked that they teach the weaknesses of evolution along with the strengths of it, and that's when the writing committee at that time said they would rather resign and take their work with them, that they would have nothing of teaching the weaknesses of evolution, which proves it can't stand the light of examination.
Okay, go ahead, Rachel.
Once again, if there are so many of these alleged weaknesses of evolution, why has no data been produced to back that up? Why has no one published the paper in Nature and claimed the $200,000 prize to contradict evolution?
I'll answer the question.
Why has that not happened? But I'd also like to talk about something that Celty said about falsifiability.
You asked a question, I hope you want an answer to it.
Okay, real quick, Miles, because we only got a few minutes.
Stephen Jay Gould, the late Stephen Jay Gould, published his theory of punctuated equilibrium, explaining why there weren't transition fossil record, fossils.
There are many transitional fossils, as a matter of fact.
Excuse me, he disagreed.
Okay.
No, actually, he didn't, and I encourage anyone
Stephen
to look
Gould,
up more.
But the evolutionist Stephen Jay Gould made a theory explain why you didn't find it.
I tell you what, let's resolve this. And
now,
both
paper as showing that there is an evidence.
Mike, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to post after the show, post on my website, if you don't mind, a link to that paper. Rachel, you can post a link to your evidence, and we'll let our listeners decide. I do want to, we only have a few minutes left, I want to go back to this question of religion and how much religion is deciding what should be taught rather than science. And Rachel, you're going to make another point.
Yes, and this does have to do with religion. Celty mentioned that science should be falsifiable, and that is why, as a Christian, I do not want my God dragged into the scientific method, because by definition, scientific propositions are falsifiable. They can be disproven. And I don't want anyone thinking they can disprove my God.
Rachel, they're disproving
what happens
your God
if they don't
they
come up with the evidence. We're putting God on trial, and this is dangerous for religion. It's dangerous for religious faith.
This is a full-force frontal attack on God, and it's only fair to allow the evidence that supports God to do what the courts have asked the schools to do is to remain neutral. And right now it's not neutral. It's against God only, and that's dead wrong.
No, that's absolutely not the case that it's against God. I'm a passionate believer in Christianity, and also I use evolution in my daily work.
It's not in the Bible. And Dr.
Wait,
Kent Tobin,
let Rachel finish. Go ahead. You're saying you're Christian and you still believe in evolution, Rachel.
As do the overwhelming majority of Christians on planet Earth. Virtually all denominations, the leadership at least of those denominations, are pro-evolution. In fact, the Catholic Church recently released a statement about how concerned they were that faithful Catholics in the United States were picking up a bunch of ideas about creationism from Protestants. The Catholic Church's position is pro-evolution, as is the position of virtually all Protestant denominations in Christianity, as is the official position of virtually all religions around the world.
There's an easy explanation for this historical. After Darwin published his book, Julian Bellhausen, called The Modern of Liberal Protestant Theology, accepted evolution. Remember, with Darwin saying the proof still didn't exist,
but
he started reinterpreting theology,
okay, but Mike,
looking through the lens of evolution. So it should not be surprising.
So there's
that
not
we
just
have
a
Protestants
vast conspiracy of scientists suppressing data. There's also a vast conspiracy of theologian.
Okay,
the
okay.
Lens of evolution.
One at a time. I want to tell you to respond to this if you can. Rachel says that the vast majority of Christian denominations do not reject the theory of evolution. You disagree with her. Is that right, Celty?
That they say that again?
Rachel said that the vast majority of Christian denominations, she cites the Catholic Church, Lutherans, and others, accept the theory of evolution as science.
I would suggest that, I accepted the theory of evolution because that's all I was ever taught. I mean, that's a no-brainer. If that's what you're taught from a teacher or someone in authority, you're going to think that they're telling you the truth without question. Unfortunately, my kids have had to learn that they can't necessarily trust teachers, because when they look at all the objective evidence science has about origins, they see that evolution doesn't rise to the top. It fails, and creation science rises to the top.
I'll tell you,
why haven't you produced any papers?
May I add one more thing? Because Rachel brought up that there was a standing offer for proof that...
Yes.
There's a standing offer by Dr. Kent Hovind in Florida. He's offered over $250,000 for one proof for evolution, and that's gone well over 10 years without being presented. So there you go.
Well, I tell you, I think both of you should post these proofs on the blogs, and somebody could make a lot of money. I'll tell you,
okay.
I'm going to go over a bit. My internet audience missed the beginning of the show, so I'm going to use this. For my radio listeners, I'm afraid that's all we have for today. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. For the internet listeners, you're going to get a special bonus if everyone can hang on a little bit more. There's so many more things to discuss. I got callers on the line, and I'd rather not end this subject. So if my internet listeners will be patient, let me just say goodbye to my radio listeners. And you folks, you radio listeners, tune in to RadioInsideScoop.com, and you can catch the end of this debate that's going to occur in just about 10-15 seconds. We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I want to apologize to my internet listeners. You're the only ones listening to me now. I know that the internet site did not work for the first 15 minutes. So if all my guests can stay on a little bit longer, let me ask. Rachel, can you stay a little bit longer?
Sure.
Celtic, can you stay a little bit longer?
Yes.
Mike, can you stay a little bit longer?
Yes.
The debate is so passionate and so strong, and I know all of you have so much to say, and I have a caller on the line, that I thought I'd give my internet listeners a special bonus. Any of you, if you have to leave, let me know. I rarely do this, but given that it failed at the beginning, I want to continue the debate, and I want to go to my caller who's been hanging on a long time. Caller, you're on the air on a special internet extended session of the Inside Scoop.
Yes, this is Mike from Fairfax.
Hey, Mike.
You said earlier, one of the people said, the people resigned instead of trying to put forward issues to disprove evolution as part of science. Are we talking about God here, or are we talking about science in a science class? Trying to disprove evolution is trying to have an electrician show that electricity can't kill somebody. That's my point. And
well, Mike, I want to understand your point before you hang up. You're saying that this should be done scientifically rather than politically? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
You can't saying, okay, you can put a theory forward, but you also have to put forward the weaknesses of the theory. We're listening on the Internet because we have electricity. The electrician knows electricity can kill. Trying to disprove evolution when you're trying to teach it's ridiculous. We all know electricity can kill. Why are you trying to say it doesn't kill? Why are you trying to say we have to show evolution as a falsity?
Okay, I'm not sure I get your point. What you're saying is that
it is ridiculous to have the people in Kansas teach a theory and then teach how it's untrue.
Oh, in other words, it'd be like teaching 2 plus 2 equals 4 and then teaching 2 plus 2 equals 5.
Correct.
It's contradictory. Okay,
yes.
I get your point. Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate that. Celty, isn't it contradictory to teach that evolution is true and it's false at the same time?
I'd like for Mike to answer that.
Okay, go ahead, Mike.
No, it's not inappropriate to teach the evidence. First of all, if you're going to teach it's true, then you have to make an experiment to prove it the same way. If you want to prove the gravitational constant, that can be done by an experiment that anybody could do any place in the world. And so just arrange that experiment and prove.
Well, Rachel says she's done those experiments with antibiotics and bacteria.
Indeed, and it's not just me. It's the millions of scientists around the world who have used evolution to guide their research. Again, I wonder, how does criticism of evolution guide your research? What is an experiment that that I can't design? And this is a very important scientific question. If you have a scientific hypothesis that conflicts with evolution, that hypothesis can be used to design an experiment.
Okay, let me ask
if
Mike.
If it's science, please explain to me what the experiment is.
What experiment would you use to disprove evolution, Mike?
First of all, you don't need to try to falsify something that they haven't proved and repeated and observed and measured yet anyway. Why would you prove something now?
Well, you do if you're trying to falsify it, which is what you're trying to do.
Okay. I would appreciate
you. Go ahead, Mike. What experiment would you design?
Now, when she says evolution guides her research, my brother does research on diabetes at Mayo's Clinic. He headed it up here in Kansas City for a while and then returned to Mayo's Clinic.
Okay.
I simply asked him, and he wasn't in the argument at all, because, you know, most scientists don't even study this issue. You talk about numbers of scientists believe. I said, if you did not believe or know about evolution, would that affect your research? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, they say it's the foundation of life science. He said, that's nonsense. I don't then enter into my thing. Now, if Rachel uses for inspiration, that's fine. George Washington Carver said he'd get up in the morning and say, we'll see what God and I can do with the peanut. I'm not going to say that a person who doesn't believe in God can't work with a peanut. But I'm saying the principles of evolution, I hope you design your experience and use intelligent when you do it. And I hope you don't do it by random chance.
Well, here's what I think Rachel's saying, is that there are experiments that show the natural selection process, bacteria, and there aren't any experiments that show it not working.
There are experiments that show that there's limitations. We have never seen a bacteria mutate to be anything except a bacteria.
Mark, I'm actually saying something different than that.
Gram-negative rod bacillus.
Okay.
Excuse me?